The Chinese government on Tuesday said Beijing and Washington have agreed to keep talking amid an escalating trade war. At a dinner Monday night, U.S. President Donald Trump touted the efforts of the Treasury Secretary to resolve the dispute. The optimistic tone comes a day after both sides ramped up trade war rhetoric to a level that sank global financial markets.
Disney is taking full control of Hulu. It notched a deal to buy Comcast's stake in the streaming service, known for movies and TV shows like The Handmaid's Tale. Hulu also gives Disney an already quickly growing audience for drama and thrillers to augment Disney's library of kids and family films. Hulu competes with Netflix and Amazon.com's Prime Video and has nearly 27 million paid subscribers.
I'm here today because President Trump is committed to improving this relationship. As I think you said, we have differences. Each country will protect its own interests, look out for its own interests of its people. But it's not destined that we're adversaries on every issue. And I hope that we can find places where we have a set of overlapping interests and can truly begin to build out strong relationships, at least in those particular issues.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Wednesday. It's May the 15th, and it's 5:11 in the morning. Thank you for tuning in for another edition of The Opening Bell and another business day getting underway. We've got the latest from the world of business for you this morning as we get underway with a good program lined up as well. More coming on markets in a minute, but on the program today, Steve Zuckerman is with us, Vice President and Health Policy Senior Fellow at Urban Institute. We're going to be talking about new research that shows, despite some of the gains in the job market and on wages, people are still having a hard time meeting some basic needs, including paying some bills and paying for food and medicine. Steve will join us first thing this morning here on The Opening Bell. A little bit later in the program, Mary Wisniewski from the Chicago Tribune will be with us, transportation reporter at the Trib, to talk a little bit about these scooters, the electric scooters. You've heard about them in other cities. They're coming to Chicago in a test run. Mary's going to be talking to us about some of the reporting she's done about how dangerous these scooters are in other places, have been in other places, and what kind of injuries they're causing and what we might expect when they finally park here in Chicago. Mary's going to be with us at about 5:38 this morning on The Opening Bell. First, let's begin on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. The opening bell rings today on Wall Street after a stock staged somewhat of a comeback yesterday to close a little bit higher on Wall Street after falling from highs of nearly 350 points at one point in the day. The Dow was up 207 points at the closing bell. NASDAQ gained about 87. The S&P finished up about 23. As we look at the markets this morning, futures are pointing toward a weak open on Wall Street, with the Dow futures down 61 points, nearly a quarter of a percent. S&P futures off nearly a quarter of a percent, and NASDAQ futures not far behind there. In Asia this morning, as we look at some of the numbers coming in from the markets there, and in the green this morning, the Nikkei is going to finish the day up nearly 121 points, or a half a percent. The Hang Seng up nearly a half a percent. The Shanghai up nearly 2%. And in Europe, markets are generally in the red, lots of red, as a matter of fact. In London, down by nearly a quarter of a percent. In Germany, off nearly a half a percent. In France, off nearly a half a percent. And oil is trading at $61.20 a barrel in the U.S., down 58 cents, down nearly a percent trades in New York. Let's get some headlines this morning, business headlines. First, talking about tariffs and the U.S.-China trade war, you have heard that President Trump insisting that China will pay for the tariffs that he's amassed in the trade war with Beijing. But Goldman Sachs has a different story. The U.S. bank claims the costs of the U.S. tariffs are falling entirely on American businesses and households. And Goldman warns that the impact on U.S. consumer prices will get worse if the dispute is not resolved. As we've been reporting, stocks tumbled in recent days, down nearly 600 points the day before yesterday, amid fears that the trade war is growing with no end in sight. The U.S. and China have the world's biggest economies. Papa John's International founder John Schnatter is selling some of his company stock for the first time in nearly 3 years. securities document filed yesterday says he cashed in about $6 million worth of stock last week after being removed from the board of Papa John's and a CEO of Papa John's amid a controversy. The lowest priced Tesla, now more expensive. The luxury electric high-performance car maker says it's raised the price of its Model 3. The previously $35,000 Model 3 now costs $35,400. And Oreo Cookies teaming up with Baskin-Robbins for its summer edition cookies. The Nabisco company will roll out five new flavors over the course of the next few months, so each one can have time to bask in the glory. In May, the S'mores Oreo will be released, followed by the Latte Thins in June, Marshmallow Moon in mid-June, Mint Chocolate Chip in July, and finally Maple Cream in August. Let's begin this morning with a look at new research showing, despite a strong jobs market and some wage gains, new research shows families are still having trouble meeting basic needs like paying for housing, utilities, and food. One of the lead researchers is with us this morning, Steve Zuckerman, Vice President, Health Policy Senior Fellow at Urban Institute. Steve, good morning. Welcome to the Opening Bell.
Good morning. Thanks for inviting me.
This is research that I think a lot of people are paying attention to because it's been repeated in some ways over and over. We've heard stories about people not having even $400 in the bank to pay for certain things. Talk to us a little bit about what this research has shown, what the headline findings are.
Well, what we really showed was that, you know, this was the second time we did this survey. We started in 2017, and we really found only very modest improvements. Despite the strong economy, we still found that 4 in 10 adults were reporting that their families had difficulty paying for housing, utilities, food, or health care in 2018, which was really not much of an improvement from the previous year. A couple of bright spots, you know, people had a little bit easier time paying their utility bills, and, you know, it was a little bit of a improvement in people paying for health care, which I think is, you know, still related to the expansion and coverage under the Affordable Care Act. But in terms of people paying their rent or their mortgage, the share of people with housing insecurity, with food insecurity in their household, not much of a change there. The one thing that we did notice is that there was a little bit of an improvement in the number of people who were dealing with multiple problems at the same time in 2018 compared to 2017. But it's still pretty clear that even though the labor market has improved a lot in recent years, there are a large number of people who are still out there struggling.
I want to get into some of the reasons, more of the reasons why on this. Do you have a sense of why we're seeing that, and where the disconnect here is between what for most people is a good economy, but not for some of these people?
Well, I think, you know, you see that, you know, while incomes are growing, median income is now up over $61,000 a year for a household. You know, income inequality is growing, so you have a lot of people who are, who are still lagging far behind the top part of the earners, and those differences are just, you know, people cannot lose sight of the fact that there's a lot of people in this economy that are not earning very, very high salaries, even though they're working full time, and that leaves a lot of people with trying to run their households, feed their families, and not necessarily having enough income to do that.
And I know in one of the recent job reports, too, a lot of folks are working more than one job and trying to do that as well. I mean, that's part of this, isn't it, that people may be employed but not fully employed, or not employed to the point where it's helping them in a great deal.
Well, that's right. I mean, people are working. I mean, the jobs numbers clearly indicate that people are working. But when you look at the income side, you see that, you know, even if they're working multiple jobs, they're not earning, in many cases, very high incomes. And that is, as you said, you know, leading to nearly, you know, half of adults, like in low-income families earning, let's say, less than $50,000 a year, not being particularly confident that they could come up with $400 for an unexpected expense. And, I mean, many people would be surprised by that, but that is a pretty that is a pretty solid number that comes up in survey after survey, that you really see people struggling with expenses like that.
This research focused on between 2007 and 2018. Since 2018, do you feel like there, based on what we're seeing from the economy and some data points, that these numbers might have improved over the last year since the survey ended, since the research ended?
Well, I mean, the survey was done just about 5 months ago. It was completed about 5 months ago. And I mean, it's hard to say what the change has been. But given what we saw between 2017 and 2018, where the economy improved slightly, but, you know, we didn't see much of a change, I wouldn't think that there has been much of a change in the last 5 months.
The big question here is how do we use this information? How do we use this research? And I know we're heading into this political year of the presidential campaign. I'm guessing that this is going to be, some of this data is going to be used by the candidates running for president.
I think it very well might be. And, you know, I think what it's really saying is that even though, you know, there's a lot of important programs to provide people with support to supplement their income, there's the Earned Income Tax Credit, there's Medicaid for people who don't have health insurance through their employer and have low incomes. In a lot of states, there's the program that is called SNAP, that used to be called food stamps, that provides food assistance. But I think what our findings say is that with all those programs, they're not adequate either in terms of people signing up for them and getting the assistance that they're eligible for, and or that even those that are signing up are not getting enough support. And I think an important point that we have found in our survey is that housing assistance, which tends not to be as widely available to people as assistance in other areas like, you know, food and medical care, we're finding that half of families are paying more than, low-income families are paying more than 30% of their incomes for housing. And that is just really a large burden.
New research out shows nearly 38.5%, nearly 39% of adults age 18 to 64 reporting at least some type of material hardship in 2018, despite the good economy, despite the strong jobs report. Stephen, part of this, and you touched on it earlier, the medical part of this, one in six adults having some sort of trouble paying medical bills or even avoiding medical care altogether because of its cost. That's going to be a big issue over the next year, too, I'm guessing.
Oh, absolutely. And I think what we've already seen is, you know, there's been some reduction in the number of people with coverage in the last year or so, with health insurance coverage, and that is definitely going to be a big issue as we go into the campaign and people think about ways either to improve the coverage options that are available to people under the Affordable Care Act, or even replace the Affordable Care Act with some larger policy ideas that that are being talked about. But I think the concern is that, you know, in recent years, there's not been as vigorous an effort to support people getting coverage under the Affordable Care Act, and that's that actually is having an impact already on the number of people who are uninsured going up a little bit.
If we can't get any better on the economy, if we continue going at the steam that we're going now, what are the policy solutions here in the short term and the long term to try to address some of these issues?
I think it really underscores the need for having a really strong set of safety net programs. I mean, people, the Earned Income Tax Credit, which is a very effective way of reducing poverty in this country, may need to be expanded to more people. As you say, you know, people are dealing with multiple jobs and, you know, still not earning maybe enough money to support their families. And I think that there needs to be more income support there, possibly, you know, increases in the minimum wage. There may need to be efforts to expand some of the housing assistance programs, child care subsidies, SNAP. I mean, people seem to need more help. I mean, the economy alone is not producing the results I think that people would like to see. And the evidence is pretty strong that some of these programs need to get expanded and maybe covering more people. And, you know, that's not necessarily the direction we're going in right now, but I think that that will be a topic of conversation during the campaign.
Would you, if you were going to do more research in the short term here, what other questions, what other information would you like to know based on what you found in this latest survey?
I think one of the things I'd like to know is how people who are really dealing with, you know, the issue you brought up about sort of irregular work schedules, how that's affecting hardship. And I think another issue that is going to be very important is there's a large segment of the population that is quite nervous about some of the changes to policy that may be made around immigration and you know, immigrant eligibility for some of these programs, even people who are in the country legally. And you know, I think there you'll see a need to we'll want to look at that more closely, sort of those relationships. But I think the question of how people are actually coping and sort of allocating the income that they have to meet their needs is really something that we're going to be looking at more closely in the future.
Well, Stephen, we appreciate you being on with us and sharing the research and data with us. We like to have you back at some point.
Absolutely. Happy to do that.
All right. Stephen Zuckerman with us from the Urban Institute, where he's Vice President of Health Policy, Senior Fellow, Health Policy Senior Fellow. You can find more on this research at urban.org at the Urban Institute.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the program. Thanks for joining us again this morning on our Wednesday edition of The Opening Bell. Shared electric scooters are coming to Chicago soon. A pilot program will bring this latest transportation fad to the city, likely early next month sometime. We have an idea of how this is going to play out, at least if you look to other cities where this is already underway, where shared electric scooters are already on the street. We thought we'd bring in Mary Wisniewski this morning, transportation reporter at Chicago Tribune, who has been writing about this and who's been seeing some of the effects of these scooters in other cities with her reporting. Mary, good morning. Welcome back to The Opening Bell.
Good morning, Steve. Thanks for having me.
First of all, talk to us a little bit about this pilot program. I'm guessing next month is when it's supposed to start. What will it look like?
Sure. It will start on June 15th, and it's going to involve between 2,500 and 3,500 scooters. And they're all going to be west of Halsted and between the north and the south branches of the Chicago River. So we're going to see them out in neighborhoods like Irving Park, Avondale, Pilsen, Austin, neighborhoods on the west and northwest and southwest side, and especially in an area that doesn't have a lot of Divvy bikes. So it's going to be in an area that is a little, you know, poor in that sort of resource right now, and we're going to try these scooters out there.
For people who are trying to imagine what these look like, it's like a kid's kick scooter with it's electrified, basically.
Right, exactly.
So other cities have these. What are they reporting about how they're working or not working?
Well, for one thing, they're really popular. They really exploded in the last couple of years. There are something like 38.5 million trips last year, which is more than the trips on shared docked bicycles. So that's one thing to know. And Portland, Oregon did a study that found that they seem to be replacing some car trips. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, though, they're also seeing lots and lots of injuries, hundreds of injuries. There have been brain trauma, broken arms. I talked to a woman who had a shattered wrist. And what's happening, there's been a couple of studies on this. The scooters have they're handled differently than bicycles. They have a higher center of gravity. People tend not to wear helmets. And people tend, when they go down, and they also have smaller wheels, so if you hit a big pothole or even a small pothole, you can come down on one of these. And sometimes people who aren't used to them, about a third of riders who aren't used to them in Austin were the ones who got injured.
This is like the Divvy bike situation where you use your mobile phone to buy time on one of them, and then the phone kind of takes you to where these scooters are located. I'm guessing you don't get a helmet with them when you pick them up, right?
You do not, though. Yeah. The companies and the city do recommend that you wear them, but it's hard to imagine a lot of people carrying a helmet around with them. One hopes that they could get used to them. I tried one, and I felt it was easy to use and comfortable to use, but I wasn't going very fast, and I was wearing a helmet.
The latest story that you've written about this in the Tribune, and there are a couple of stories that have now been filed by you on this, the pictures of them just laying around on the street corners, on sidewalks, is that how it's going to work here, where people just dump them where they're done using them?
Well, the city hopes not. The city has been, Chicago has been a little later than other cities in adopting this, so they've had time to look at the problems that have been seen in other cities and come up with their project in a way that they hope will avoid some of these problems. They've given directions about where you can park a scooter. You can park it, you don't have to park it at a dock, but you do have to park it out of the right of way in the sidewalk. You have to park it, you know, where you'd park a bike, where you'd have other kind of street furniture like newspaper boxes, and you actually have to take a picture of the scooter after you park it and send it to the scooter company to show that you parked it correctly. If they're not parked correctly, the scooter companies are required to go out and pick them up and take them away. And they're also supposed to pick them up off the streets at midnight before they start again the next morning. The city hopes this will avoid what the commissioner called the knucklehead problem of people throwing them in rivers and throwing them into trees or into parks, which has also been seen in other cities.
Yeah, the knucklehead problem, I like that. Part of it is also not riding on the sidewalk.
Right.
It sounds like there are a lot of rules. Who's going to be enforcing all of this?
There are a lot of rules. The vendor companies are supposed to be enforcing this, for one thing, especially the part about picking them up when they're not parked correctly. And I would, you know, the Chicago police can enforce them, but, you know, they have a lot of other things to do. The public can also enforce it by, if they see a scooter parked correctly, to call 311. But as one lady commented, who I talked to for the article, there are people who don't follow the rules, so you can expect that there are some people who will not be following the rules and will be riding on the sidewalk or parking these incorrectly. But you know, the city hopes that this will be a way to replace some cars, and the scooter companies point out that cars themselves cause a whole lot of injuries, and if you have less cars out on the streets, that could be, you know, less people getting hit by cars, and so that can create its own kind of safety.
Well, we will all be watching this test, but who in the end, how will this be judged in the end? Who will decide whether or not the test is, we've passed the test?
The city will decide. The city will, the pilot runs through October 15th. And then the city will decide whether or not they're going to have a scooter program for next year, and decide how to implement it and decide which vendors to use. They did the same thing with dockless bikes. And what they decided to do with that is, just stick with one vendor, which is Lyft, which runs Motivate, and they have mostly docked, but some bikes that you can park to objects. So that's how so they tried it, and they decided some things worked and some things didn't work, and that's the program that they went with in the end.
This is obviously a demographic thing, right? I mean, because I'm sitting here thinking, as an older person, this is like a kid taking it. Yeah, right. This is like a kid taking out their toy and just leaving it in the front yard without putting it up, right?
Well, they're not, people look at them as toys, but as one personal injury attorney I talked to pointed out, they're not toys. They're tools that are supposed to help us with transportation. And I actually have a feeling that a lot of different people are going to use this. Because they're electric, they're not like Divvy, so you can get on one to maybe go, to your L stop or, take a short trip and not get sweaty. You don't have to prepare, having sports clothes on or anything like that. You can just hop on and go. So I can imagine a lot of people using this, but I can also imagine that people are going to have to, you're going to have to be careful. You're going to have to figure out how it works. You're going to have to read the educational material that the scooter companies provide before you get on, so that you know what you're doing.
Right, and also can bring your helmet along, too. Sounds like that's going to be necessary, maybe even for pedestrians where these things are at as well, having that.
Well, I think it is a good idea to bring your helmet. Just get used to carrying it. And I've noticed that more people are doing that on Divvy bikes than they used to. So I think that people, once they use something enough, they can get into the habit of using a helmet. And I think that's a great idea.
What do we know about the vendors that are doing these programs? I know that one of them that's featured in the story is named Bird. What do we know about the vendors?
The big vendors are Bird, there's Uber, does electric scooters, and there's also Lime. And they're the ones that have been operating in other cities. They have a trade association, which says that they're very focused on safety and focused on education. And I know that they're all, we don't know which vendors are going to be here yet, but we do know that these big vendors have made applications with the city, and they're hoping that they can get chosen.
All right. Well, Mary, I'm kind of looking forward to this. We should go out on a scooter ride together, and I'd be interested to see what we all see together.
Yeah, but you know, we got to bring helmets, okay? Yeah,
absolutely. Mary, thank you for being with us this morning.
Okay, thank you, Steve.
Mary Wisniewski from the Chicago Tribune, where she writes about transportation. We're going to link out to her latest story from chicagotribune.com in the podcast of The Opening Bell a little bit later on this morning.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures are pointing toward a weak open on Wall Street this morning. Dow futures down 78 points, nearly a third as we head to the opening bell. S&P and NASDAQ futures off a quarter of a percent. Now, agriculture and commodities. Good morning, Ori and Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. Planting delays finally showed up in the futures market at the Chicago Board of Trade yesterday, with 30% of the nation's corn crop planted compared to a five-year average of 66% planted by this date, 9% of the nation's soybeans compared to a five-year average of 29% planted by this date. We finally saw some strength in the grain market. Pretty good strength, as a matter of fact, as those planting delays finally showed up on the trading floor. July soybeans, for example, up 27 cents a bushel, 831 and a half. July corn up 12 and a quarter cents a bushel at 368 and three quarters. And even July wheat showed a gain of 13 and a half cents, ending the day at 448 and a half. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk outlook for this Wednesday, May the 15th, retail sales figures for April due this morning. Analysts expect to see sales slowing. Experts forecasting growth of 0.2%, down from 1.6% growth in March. Industrial production for April also being released today. The forecast is no change from March. The housing market index also due out. Housing industry analysts forecast some slight improvement over the last month or so. And also today, we expect to see the EIA natural petroleum status report on petroleum gas. Also, a couple of Fed speakers out today, including Randall Quarles and Tom Barkin, speaking about monetary policy. And the Mortgage Bankers Association has a look at weekly mortgage rates. And on the earnings calendar, Alibaba, Tencent, and Macy's all reporting quarterly financial earnings. Just some of the things that could move the markets on this Wednesday, May the 15th.